Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, founder and CEO for Shoshanworks and a global advisory firm for ecosystems and organizational transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build for resilient futures. In this series, brought to you by Shoshanworks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, we're exploring these new ecosystemic models and impacts across every facet of society. And we're wrapping up our discussion today with Ross Dawson on how we should be thinking about utilizing AI in strategic decision-making, using the participation of AI frameworks and tools in order to amplify the utility and the effectiveness and the beneficial outcomes of strategic decision-making and human potential. So my co-hosts for this episode are James Villarubia and Ed Powell. James, over to you.
Thanks, Diane. Hello, everyone. My name is James Villarubia. I'm currently a Presidential Innovation Fellow with NASA's Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. And I'm helping the engineers and the scientists there use AI to imagine dystopian and utopian futures and hopefully design systems and solutions to sort of solve for tomorrow's problems today. So I'm really excited to continue this conversation with Ross. I think we've been really seeing some great concepts and ideas around AI and what it holds for us. So excited to be here. Ed, over to you.
Thanks, James. I'm Ed Powell. I'm CEO of TensorX. We sit at the intersection of the cloud, the crowd, and AI to drive operational performance from design to procurement to strategic planning all the way through real-time deployment. Back to you, Diane.
Thanks, Ed. And Ross, welcome again today. And for our listeners that are just joining us today, maybe if you can share a little bit of an intro.
I'm Ross Dawson. I'm a futurist and entrepreneur.
So I've been professional futurist for the last 25 years and killed my career in technology and have really looked at how it is that technology can assist humans. And my first company was called Advanced Human Technologies, and I think found that over 25 years ago, and I think that's spot on today, as in that's what we're trying to do. Technologies that advance humans, and it's rather than focusing on the humans rather than the technologies.
Fantastic, Ross. Welcome, and we're excited to round out our conversation with you today. And to your point, you've been thinking about designing for ecosystemic wellness for quite some time now, right? You've been thinking about the intersection or the collision space between the humans and technology and how we should be thinking about the frameworks and the design to drive those more beneficial versus the unintended consequences. So maybe for our listeners today, if you can talk to us a little bit about how we should be thinking about using AI to become better systems thinkers, how we should be approaching decision-making frameworks with the benefit of these tools.
So we need to be thinking at a systems level for anything which is more than, you know, trivial. How things feed on themselves, how, you know, essentially systems become beyond the comprehensible, you know, moving into the complex, deep systems that's, you know, of course, at the highest level, things like healthcare systems or cities or even organizations, economies. And so we need to be thinking at a systems level. There's nothing where we can reduce this down to elements and parameters and any simple models. We need to be thinking at a systems level, and that's what humans are great at if we train ourselves to think of the systems in a systems way. So this is something we need to make more explicit. There are some people who are intrinsically great systems thinkers. You know, I was deeply inspired by Buckminster Fuller as a youth, you know, great scientists in the last century who thought in systems. And I think we all know people that intrinsically can think at a systems level. So the first step to get better at systems thinking is to make it explicit. So systems diagrams, or there's a concept mapping and a whole array of other tools are ways in which we can both clarify our own systems thinking and also convey that to others. And one of the points is that working memory of humans is pretty limited. So unless we can't truly think about a very big, large, complex system in our own minds without being able to use the assistance of paper and pencil or technologies, whatever it is, to actually map that out. And that's where AI can start to assist us. And the most important way I see is being able to actually start to uncover what are these elements? What are the things we haven't thought of? What are the relationships between these? How could these, what might the implications of these be? And this is just on the frontier now. I'm just beginning to play a little bit with trying to get GPT-like systems to generate systems models to integrate that with my own systems thinking. But this is one of the first points where we can, this is where we have to do this in human AI systems. I think any completely AI-generated systems model will be highly limited because of the number of the parameters in there will mean that it's more vulnerable to any misinterpretation than a simple model. So we need to be building human AI ways of mapping out systems and understand the implications, and as a result, how we can best move these systems in the direction that we want.
That's awesome. Also, I think that the piece got to me was this idea of, well, you got to put it down first as the first step, the human putting something down on paper. And it maybe actually sort of reframe what you're saying in the design thinking structure, sort of convergent and diverging, in that humans are good at systems, but it's a lot of it's in our head. Being able to sort of structure that and put it down on paper in clear enough or simple enough terms to share, to explain, to build off of is a first step. And you know, I think that's something, you know, unique to humans. We can look at it and see what's important to then investigate. But I liked your point about using AI to then sort of uncover the things we can't see, to sort of use that as a launching pad of investigation. I do think that we're trying to do that at NASA, but you know, it's the Wild West out there right now with some of these sort of advanced LLMs. What other sort of, you know, in terms of uncovering elements and connecting, you know, capabilities, are there other pieces or other maybe sort of further down the line of decision making where AI, where you're starting to see some AI used or could be used for, you know, for powerful, you know, or better decision making?
So one of the most obvious ones is climate change, where it's fair to call the climate a complex system. And
that's fair enough.
That's where we have a lot of data. We have an extraordinary amount of data around climate. This does not allow us to predict climate, but it enables us to understand the nature of begin to understand the nature of climate change and how that may play out, and to build some scenarios. And I think in a whole lot of different levels, whether it's from scenario planning, from a sort of human construct through to a more, you know, mathematical-based Monte Carlo type scenarios, whatever level scenarios you do, they help build a systemic understanding. And because that's the whole nature of systems, they are complex, they could go in many directions. So I think there's this interplay between scenario building and building useful models of systems, which are deeply tied together. But in the case of climate, there are some very, very important decisions that need to be made now, most obviously around sea level change. So we can't predict it accurately, but we can see some scenarios, we can see some ways in which that may play out. And this means that, amongst other things, anybody that owns a property by the sea has some choices. And of course, those governments of cities and nations need to be considering not just the climate as a system, but the society and economy as a system. What happens? How can we move people to different locations? What does this mean for agriculture? What does this mean for the roles that we'll need in the economy? These are extraordinarily complex decisions, but ones which we are facing now and need to be actioning now to be in place in the next 5, 10, 20 years as these things play out. So this is where we have data, we have AI systems, and there are some, you know, interesting companies at the moment that are focusing purely on applying AI to the data of climate in order to be able to format that for strategic decision making, of which there is, you know, essentially it's going to be one of the major categories of strategic decisions that we make over the coming years.
So I have two quick questions on that. So in the current models that are predicting, like, for example, in around Miami, for example, rapid increases and you know, basically recapturing the water areas in the and along the beach, are those models, do you know what, how long are those models predicting based on? Do you know the history there? Because there have been certain times in for example, the 40s, when there was rapid change in sea level. And if you'd predicted it outright there, you'd have thought by the 70s, we'd have been underwater. Do you know how long the ones we're using now, how far they go back to predict?
Well, there are a number of different models out there. The ones which you most use are the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change data, which do provide multiple scenarios. So there is a multiple prediction path for those. And these are continuously revised. And I think one of the interesting things is to, for any continually revised models, to look back on the accuracy of predictions. And just as a sort of another set of predictions, if you look at the International Energy Agency predictions for the wind and solar deployments, basically every year there's been massively wrong. And basically you've had, you know, decades of movements in a single year. So you've got to, you know, what they predicted to happen in 20 years and 2 years pretty consistently. Whereas the IPCC data has been pretty consistent in the past. And of course, you know, you need to take everything with, you know, a truckload of salt, as in, you know, these are model-based. There are some pretty rich models behind those. Climate, in a broader sense, is by its whole nature deeply, deeply unpredictable. But there are some pretty sound foundations for those models, as I understand them.
And in looking at these complex models around climate, do you have an understanding of why it is that there's so much pushback against nuclear? Because it seems like nuclear is the obvious kind of high density, high output approaches to electrify the world.
I frame that as our cognitive models. We have different cognitive models around the risks and opportunities around that. And I think there's many people who would argue that many people's assessment of the risk of nuclear is disproportionate. But this comes back to, I think, in a way, a foundation to all of these conversations, which is around, how is it that we can build models for decision-making that are, I can't say beyond emotion, because that's impossible, but where we have some kind of a sound grounding to that. And I think, you know, for example, there's some people that may say, well, the risk of, you know, a minuscule risk of any kind of nuclear accident is something which is just out of bounds. Yeah, we should never do that. Never should never be any scope for that. So we'll just entirely eliminate that from my scope of what I think about. And whereas others may sort of say, okay, well, here's relative probabilities, here's the assessment, this you know, the degrees of risk, this is the way in which I, in my cognition, assess that risk. You know, and again, humans are not good at statistics at, you know, what's the chance of winning the lottery, or what's the chance of a nuclear plant going astray, or how do I do that? But these are all aspects of human cognition. And so and that's represented differently in a whole array of people. And I think that, you know, without going into the arguments around nuclear plants, I think it's fair to say there's a whole lot of different cognitive models around the assessment of the nuclear plants, which means that essentially there's a sufficient number of people. These cognitive models mean that, okay, that's not something which we want to countenance, even though, as you say, there are some very, very, very sound arguments for nuclear energy as a substitute for carbon fuels power.
Well, I would like to sort of dig in on that. I think I really like that idea of sort of a mental model and sort of taking stock of that to sort of reference back something we talked about in an earlier episode around human flaws. I mean, if you look at sort of the likelihood of dying of a terrorist attack is, you know, versus dying of heart disease, I think heart disease is 10 million times more likely to kill you than terrorism. But if you look at the news, you know, you wouldn't guess that. And if you ask the average person, they wouldn't sort of guess that. But I don't think that's necessarily just a problem with the sort of news structure. I think that the news is actually sort of feeding on probably is a latent structure of the mental model that humans come up with, the biases that sort of our brains come at problems with, like how we interpret that information, adrenaline and fear and whatnot, what gets us going, what we want to pay attention to. So it's interesting to talk about sort of a mental model speaking, you know, speaking to almost to the bias of how we process information. How do you think that is going to, you know, how do we get around that in the future? When we want to have mental models, we do want that, but we need to sort of, you know, plan around some of those not, you know, unconscious biases that are just, you know, we'll never get rid of. It's our sort of brains are chemically wired. Do you think we can? I mean, where do we go?
We are blessed with cognition. That is the, you know, wonders of humans. We have extraordinary cognition, but built into our brain is a whole array of cognitive biases. And yeah, Daniel Kahneman, who, you know, is one of the, put together with Emil Tversky, you know, essentially created the field of cognitive bias, basically says that, you know, even though he studied cognitive bias and it doesn't reduce his cognitive bias, and he is actually pessimistic about us being able to reduce our cognitive bias. I think we can do a little better than that, but probably not very well. It's built into us. So that's where we can try to complement systems. So this is not just in terms of delegating to AI, but how it is we present information to us. As you suggested, there's a role of media which is leading us astray. You know, at a systemic level, we need to be able to look at how we can improve the quality of our media. But I think at an individual level, we can be far better at being able to choose our media sources, our inputs, to be able to balance those, to use AI systems around veracity or reliability of data to be able to provide a more balanced input to us. So I think that AI can assist us in being able to, if we choose, to be able to reduce our cognitive biases, but not to eliminate them. And that's just built into what it is to be human.
I think that's so important to keep in mind. And you know, as we kind of wrap up the conversation for this episode, I think some of the key takeaways for our listeners, as we think about how to put these tools into context and the constant evolution of co-evolution of humanity and technology, you really kind of set the tone for the conversation here this afternoon, Russ, by reminding us that we all need to be thinking at the systems level and really consistently kind of pushing our perspective and our focus to understanding the systemic implications as we innovate within these systems. And it's an interesting tension. I personally have spent a lot of time over the past decade or so in the gig economy, where really intense specialization has begun to emerge, where we have all in the future of work started to focus in on intense specialization and taskification and reframing work. But that too is evolving in an era where AI is and technology is connecting systems and connecting models, where we have to coexist as specialists and systems thinkers, right? So there's this very interesting tension in our arenas of focus. So how do we ensure that we are designing for ecosystemic wellness? And we'll go around the horn here real quickly. Key takeaways or top three recommendations for to keep in mind as we enter an era where change is flowing through markets very quickly. We have to maintain both a specialist orientation and a systemic focus in order to ensure that we're really realizing the greatest beneficial outcomes of these new tools and technologies and models. So maybe, Ross, if we can start with you, and then let's round it out with James and Ed. Ross, what are your top recommendations for us, for humanity, to design for ecosystemic wellness?
So I'd just like to come back to the point that we do live in a capitalist society, and capital is the foundation of everything we do. $400 trillion out of capital in the world. And how we deploy that is perhaps the most fundamental decision that we have. How do we apply capital to things that create economic value and social value? So I think that we need to be thinking at the level of making better decisions around allocating our capital, our resources, our attention to create value. And that's seeing the whole world as a system. You know, what are all the options we have? Infinite options. Let's assess that as a system. Let's find where are the leverage points. And that's where my starting point for thinking about systems is, first of all, you look at the system as a whole. You are seeing the things that reinforce themselves. You see the dampening loops in a system. And from that, what the real outcome from taking a systems view is, identifying the leverage points where the least action can create the greatest outcome. And that's where we need to be. Incredibly complex systems in the world today. So much we need to do to create a better world. We need to be mapping out those systems, identifying the leverage points, and applying as much as possible to our resource to that. And that includes our effective allocation of capital so that we can create a better tomorrow.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So powerful and an amazing opportunity. James, over to you.
Yeah, I think the point that you made earlier, Ross, that is probably going to stick with me from this episode, you've given us so many great nuggets, is the idea of sort of systems thinking and sort of applying AI, or, you know, to not simply just the solution, but using AI to supplement sort of not even just the decision making, but even the investigatory process. So the early stage was, I think, something that will really stick with me. AI might not be right. It might not have a great recommendation, but an interesting or compelling wrong scenario can be as instructive to some of the humans as decision makers. Like, well, what if? Why did it find that? Why did it sort of emerge with that pattern? That was pretty interesting to me. Sort of, I think that hopefully is interesting to our listeners, that, you know, there's so many other ways to think about the use of AI as opposed to just getting your end result, but actually sort of aiding you along a longer sort of deliberative journey. And for complex systems, I think that's absolutely necessary, because we can't wait to use AI to the very end. There's just too much information for us to cover. So I think it ties in with your capital markets. You can't just wait for it to give you a brand new product. You gotta use it to get to those early decisions. Where do you spend? What do you start looking at? It's really interesting. So Ed, over to you.
I agree with you, James. There's a couple of things that hit me. One is, in looking at the current situation, especially in the U.S., I think for the last 20 years, we've lived with what I would call platform thinking. We think about a platform. We think about the F-35. We think about very things as platforms. Whereas I think the competition in the world views them very much as complex systems. And complex systems of low-cost, highly mobile, highly dynamic assets become a great threat to people who think in platform ways. Which takes me to our mutual friend here, Amos Tversky. When asked what he thought about artificial intelligence, he responded, "I'm much more interested in human stupidity." So I think what we learned from today is that while there are great opportunities with artificial intelligence, there's still the threat that it will all be blown up by human stupidity. Back to you, Diane.
And with that, can't think of a better close and a more inspiring close. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And please do continue to follow us on the Ecosystemic Futures podcast series, where we'll explore fascinating pathways for humanity, society, and industry, and ways to design for greater ecosystemic wellness. So please follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast series, and you can always check into shoshimworks.com for more information. And our deepest gratitude and thanks to Ross Dawson for inspiring in these past three episodes. So we'll continue to follow your work and your worldview, Ross, but thank you for joining us here. And everyone, have a great day. Thank you so much.